Hey, y'all, if you enjoy watching your podcast, which seems kind of weird, watching your podcast, but some people really enjoy that. So we have a YouTube channel. You can find it at Heather Parady, P-A-R-A-D-Y. It's also linked up in the show notes. You can hit subscribe. And several of these interviews are actually in person, so you can watch that. Again, that is at Heather Parady on YouTube. Carrie Oberbrunner is a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author of more than a dozen books. As the founder of Igniting Souls Book Publishing Company, he has had his hand on hundreds of projects from world-renowned leaders. As a former pastor, he has a huge heart to, as he says, ignite souls. I had him on the show today to kind of go there. Not only did I want to hear about his story of transformation, but also, as you know me pretty well, hopefully by now, hearing that he was a former pastor and he's still very involved with his faith, I wanted to push him a little bit and ask about some questions that I have with Christianity, calling, frankly, what in the world we're doing here. To feel like honest conversations about spirituality, heart stuff, and wrestling with questions that, frankly, none of us have the answer to. You're going to love this conversation with my friend, the one and only soul-igniting Carrie Oberbrunner.
And I'm going to use a strong word on purpose. You're divinely pissed off. It actually means like divine anger, like, you know, but it's this thing that like we don't teach in American church, which is basically like, I'm not getting up off my knees, God, until you give me an answer. Until you name the church, you can't heal from the church.
What do you mean?
Until you name the person in the church who hurt you, who offended you, you cannot heal. Before God can use a person greatly, he must wound them deeply.
Oh boy.
See, and that does not, people do not like that at all.
Friends, family, I have Carrie Oberbrunner with me, and I've been really excited about this conversation because I feel like I know Carrie pretty well.
Yes.
Pretty well. But there are some things that I've been curious about with you that I haven't talked to you about yet. And selfishly, I have a podcast so I can drag people on and ask them what I really want to know.
That's right. And I have to give you the truth.
That's it. That's it. Man, what you've accomplished is incredible. I feel like I know 10%. And every time I talk to you, I learn more and more of the things that you've put out into the world and brought to life. And you're in the business of helping people take their idea and execute it and breathe life into it and put it out into the world. I love that. I believe ideas are living entities outside of ourselves and need a home. And if you don't act on it, somebody else will. And so you're an action taker. And I was kind of shocked when I first met you to learn that before you were an entrepreneur, you were a pastor.
What?
Of a church. I was like, what?
For 12 years. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Yeah. So you know me. I have some questions around that. But Carrie, before we get rolling into your life story, your philosophy on everything in the world, thanks for taking time out of your day to join us.
It's one of my highlights today. Super excited.
Let's do it. So tell me, before you were a pastor, what was your life plan?
Listen, I've always been a massive, massive dreamer. So I'm not a crier. But as I've gotten older, if I see some cheesy movie or something with some dreamer in it who's had like a ton of adversity, I'm like, oh my gosh. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you what, I really did not get along with God in my teen years because I felt like God was against my dreams. I felt like, I felt like every time I have a dream, God like opposes it. And it was like a ton of anger. And so I thought, you know what? Here's the weird thing, Heather. There's this story in the Bible about the prodigal son, you know, and everyone's like, oh yeah, I know that. Or they're like, hey, the young punk kid, you know, I was the older brother kid, you know, so there's two brothers and I was the older brother. And the older brother's like, I hate you, father, but I know that I can't be opposed to you. So I'm going to work for you, but I'm angry. And, you know, in fact, I'm even more angry that you gave part of the inheritance to the younger son who's a punk and I'm trying to be good. Like that was my whole thing.
Okay. What dreams did you have that you felt like God was against? Where did that idea come from?
I mean, listen, I'm a lover. I'm a romantic guy. So like, I guess you could say okay, God, is this young lady the one? You know? Mm. You know what I'm saying? So like early on, I mean, I just gave my heart to you know, I was always like, you know, no substances, no, you know, no crazy stuff, but I was just like all in with everything. I mean, I could be playing checkers and I'm all in so much so that my friends are like, dang, you're competitive. Like I'm all in with everything that I do. So I was all in with these young ladies, like, she's the one, we're going to get married, you know, this type of thing. And then God would just like, phew, like, I'm not saying God, but like, it would just wouldn't work out. And I would be so frustrated. But it really comes down, like, if you want to talk about career wise, it really comes down to me believing I was supposed to be an Air Force chaplain. Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to be Air Force chaplain. Why? Because I'm like adventure, you know, career path, helping people, you know, military discipline, the whole thing. So, I mean, I go through like all the right ropes, right? You got to get like your church to endorse you. You got to go through the denomination's going to say like, you can be the one, you know, like, so I go through all this stuff, right? And I even got a scholarship for seminary because I was the Air Force chaplain in training. So like everything's set. And then I go to the recruiter office and she's like, okay, you're in, but let's just fill out the form, you know, the health form. Do you have HIV? No. Have you ever had HIV? No. Do you have cancer? No. Have you ever had asthma? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, hold on. She gets up, shuts her door, sits back down and says, listen, because of Desert Storm stuff, which again, I'm 10 years older than you, so you wouldn't even know this stuff. But she's like, because of Desert Storm and all this, if you say you have asthma, you're not going to get in.
Wow.
And she said, here's the pen, sign the form that you've never had it and you're in. And at the top, yeah. And at the top, it says, if you lie on this form, you, you know, $10,000 or, you know, and I'm like, what do you mean? She said, you need to say that you have never had asthma and I will take care of everything and just sign the form. But here I am as like a 22-year-old young man or 21, something like that. And like seminary's going to be paid for, career path set.
Yeah.
And this was just another example. I could go through so many examples, but here was another example. And I thought about it, Heather, and I thought about signing it. And then I thought, you know, someday my luck, I'm going to be overseas. There's going to be some bomb situation or guns or something. And I'm going to be like, should I even be here? Yeah. So I tell her, I say, you know what? I need to think about it over the weekend. So I go in the car and I just literally cuss God out, like tears streaming, banging on the steering wheel. Like, you know, what the F, you know, like another example of me trying to be on God's team, do God's work. And here he gives me the desire and then slams the door.
How do you wrestle with that now, looking back, with God giving you, quote, desires and, quote, God taking it away? Because honestly, I don't know if I believe either one of those. I don't know if God gives us the desires. Yeah. I don't know if God takes us away. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I used to be like, you know, oh, it was God. It was that. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, was that God? I don't even know. So how do you wrestle with that now?
Yeah. So I think every person who follows God has to wrestle with the question of, is my life my own or is it not?
Oh boy.
Because if my life is, you know, the classic, okay, God, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what my wife's going to be like. Here's what my kids are going to be like. Here's what, you know, or here's, and then I'm going to, and then if you put all that, I'll sign my name. You know, that's kind of the type of Christianity that a lot of people have grown up with. What it really is it's like, you know, sign your name. And then I'll fill in the details. That's what God kind of says. Like, you know, and that's not really popular today because that's essentially, there's, you know, Christian terms called making Jesus the Lord of your life, where like he can say anything, anywhere, anytime, any place, like even down to your health. I was thinking of this the other day. I'm like, Heather, I'm pretty cool with everything, but I thought my health, I really like my health. I really like cycling. I, you know, I can get out stress. And I thought, wow, would I even give my health and say, God, you can do whatever? And I was like, dang, I don't know, you know? Like, but my point is this. There's a verse in scripture that says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Mm-hmm. Now, there's two ways to look at that verse. One way is, if I get tight with God, I get the Lamborghini. You know, that's what a lot of people do. Like, if I get tight with God, I get the followers. If I get tight with God, I get the dream job. If I, you know, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. The other way to view it is, if I'm tight with God, the desires that I have will be God-given. If I'm tight with my wife, I already know what she wants. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be like, you know, does she want to go on a trip? I don't know. Like, if you're tight with someone, you know what is in their heart. So for me, the question is, like, I think what God was doing is he was shaping me and steering me. I would have been horrible in the military. Like, you know me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I would have been good. I don't know.
True at all.
I don't know. Maybe I would be good. But like, would I be bored? Would I be like, what the heck? Like, I'm a writer now. I like to create. I like to, you know. Yeah. So I think what God does a lot of times is steer us. And if we truly believe that he has our best in mind, then like, I had to go through that military thing. I mean, I'll tell you why I had to go through it, because like, I would not have even gone to that seminary and then I wouldn't have met my wife. Like, there's so many things that I don't even know and I can't even look at from my perspective, you see?
So there was something inside of you from a very early age, because the fact that you didn't just want to go into the military, you wanted to be a chaplain, you've felt, and I'm putting words in your mouth, tell me if I'm wrong, you have felt called to ministry your entire life, it sounds like.
I had older people come up to me and be like, you know, God wants to use you. And I thought that meant like missionary or pastor, you know, like the classic. But now I feel like, man, I'm igniting souls. I just got off the phone. I'm not even kidding. Like, minutes before, guess what? A gentleman is helping a cardiologist who's building hearts out of stem cells from your fingernails. And she's like literally saving lives. And he got on the phone with me because he's like, she's in the lab creating all this, but she needs to protect her IP. And if she protects her IP, if she protects her intellectual property, it's going to bring in more investors. And if it brings in more investors, she's going to be able to keep doing her work and faster. And she's going to actually create more hearts and save more lives. Like, that was my call 10 minutes ago. You see?
Yeah. I know that's why I wanted to lean into, but to get there, we need to kind of go here first before you started igniting souls, blockchain, Easy IP, all the ventures that you have.
Yeah.
You said you spent 12 years as a pastor. And I'm just curious. It makes sense why you would become one based off what you just told me. Why did you leave though?
Oh, it was killing me. If my dad would have been a successful business person, I probably would have been like, I don't know. I mean, I think I would have been like a massive jerk, because I am really ambitious. I'm really a driver and I really like to take action. And so like all that rough stuff that makes a lot of quote CEOs really successful, God put me inside a church for 12 years to I think just show me like hurting people and leading with emotional intelligence, EQ, not just IQ. And like, I mean, I don't even like money. And I say that in a weird way. Like, my son is upstairs investing in crypto, like as we speak. Like, my son is like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Heather, look at your watch, look at your car. Like, you know, we're working on him in other ways. But I mean, he's great. I love it. But he's so wired differently than me. My people that I'm inspired by are like Dan Sullivan or John Maxwell, or, you know, these people that are just like leadership and coaching. And so I don't even know where I was going with all that, but so God had to send me into a church to, I think, like, really just, people might get offended, but like beat the crap out of me. Like, there's a phrase by Oswald Chambers, and it says, I think it's him or Tozer, but it says, before God can use a person greatly, he must wound them deeply.
Oh boy.
See, and that does not, people do not like that at all. But if you look at scripture, like Jacob wrestling the angel, and this gets into one of my books, Your Secret Name. Jacob, his whole life was like, bless me, God, bless me, bless me. And then God finally is wrestling him and he dislocates his hip. just kind of like jacked up. And then God, the angel says, let me go. And Jacob says, I'm not letting you go. And there's this term, which Heather, which a lot of people don't know, it's the word importunity. So people
Never
can
heard of it.
Google that. Yeah, people can Google it. But it means like you're divinely, and I'm going to use a strong word on purpose, you're divinely pissed off. It
Okay.
actually means like divine anger, but it's this thing that like we don't teach in American church, which is basically like, I'm not getting up off my knees, God, until you give me an answer. Like we have this real cheesy take it or leave it, like God's not answering me, so I'm not going to talk to him. Like I'm talking about you know my story. I was a cutter. Like I was like that close to ending my life. And the only reason I didn't is because I thought if I end my life, I'm going to get to heaven and God's going to be like, you're here early. Look what I had planned for you. And I, for all of eternity, I would be like, ah, crap. I could have chatted with Heather on a podcast, So I feel like, I went through some deep stuff and I'm not saying like, oh my gosh, I know people today have been through like crazier stuff, trauma. But here's the thing, you cannot compare your trauma to someone else's.
Right.
Because like I know you're in therapy, I was in therapy for a bunch of years, to get over self-injury. But long story short though, is like God, here's the breaking point that happened. Instead of me taking all my anger on myself, which is what self-injury is, it's you being self-angry, right? And a lot of times self-injury is about control. I can re-injure myself, but now I can decide when, how long, how often. You're in control. You are now reenacting your pain, but in a way that you are in control. And that's not all the reasons why, but that was my reason why. So then what broke me was these certain psalms in the Bible where David is divinely pissed off. Like he is saying, God, I am so ticked at my enemies. May you take them and blot them out of the book of life. May you take their widows and make them, to be without provision. May you kill their children. Like he's writing these crazy things. And I'm reading that in the Bible and I'm like, okay, it says this about David, but then it says he's a man after God's own heart. And what happened, Heather, is like the blend of God accepting us as we are. And I realized that spirituality is actually much closer to authenticity. And so, like, all the labels of all the church stuff and all the, like, hey, let's put on a plastic face, that all like got massively shifted. And what happened is I took my pain at myself and I actually started massively putting it toward God. Like my journals became really intense. Like, F you, God, for this, like just very
I
intense.
can't
And all
imagine you cussing. I just
my, oh
can't.
yeah. Oh,
I
I
can't
could.
picture
Oh, I could. No, I could. I could. But yeah, I can just,
How old were you when you started cutting? Like what point was that?
Yeah, you ready for this? Because I had to like go through all this in my therapy of like thinking through this. Biting at the age of 10.
Really?
Really? Biting at the age of 10. And I can verify that because I literally dug up like old counseling notes. I went deep. When I wrote this book called Your Secret Name, I went really deep because I was like, okay, God. I felt like God wanted me to write my story. And at first I'm like, psh, yeah, right. I'm not writing my story. And then I felt like God was saying, okay, but if you don't, you're going to miss out on a major blessing. And I was like, dang. So anyway, at the age of 10, I went and saw my first psychologist. And I remember lying on the form because my dad was, walking me through the form, back, this is a long time ago, 1986. Okay. So counseling was very different back then and all this stuff. But they asked the question on that form, have you ever thought about suicide? And as a 10-year-old, I didn't know what that word meant. So I'm like, what is that, Dad? And he's like, well, that's where you want to kill yourself, you know? And I lied at 10. I had already thought at 10 of ending my life. And,
how come? You know,
yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. People are like, why? And I could probably trace it back. Like if I really had to like think through and put pieces together. So I had an uncle who killed himself at the, you know, at he hung himself. So like there's a family pattern of mental illness, but I could go into a whole thing of like, was I abused as a young kid? Mm-hmm. Maybe not, certainly not my parents. Okay.
Right.
But from this gentleman, like, why does someone kill themselves and hang themselves, you know, at the age of 18? And then I could like retell a story about like, yep. You know, but the thing is like, I don't remember. So I don't even go there, you know, and think like, you know, am I blocking it out? I'm not going to assign blame. I don't know. So
yeah.
The reality is I had enough self-hatred at the age of 10, like massive stuttering problems. So then you get made fun of. So then you just don't talk. And then you know, how do you express yourself when you're angry? So like, there's a whole thing of complexity. Where I don't go is like victim. You know, I feel like victim is saying blame, excuses, denial, you know, mm-hmm. And victor is ownership, accountability, responsibility. Like I can't go and be like, well, you know, something happened to me at a young age, so I'm just going to be a jerk now. Like people do that all the time, or people owe me, or people this. You're not going to get anywhere in life. So I had to work through a lot of this. At the end of the day, God had to heal me in big ways. And so there's a term out there called wounded healer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm a wounded healer. That's pretty bold to say that. But what I do know is I can like spot things in people really quick.
Yes, you can. I'm a test of that.
because I was the guy who was a pastor in cutting. Like I didn't go through my full healing until like my second year of being a pastor. So I'm literally preaching sermons on Sunday and cutting on Monday. Like I know the whole game of pretending.
Did you ever come out to your congregation and tell them?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, 23 is when I got married and I became a small country church pastor while I was finishing my last year of seminary. Then during that last year though, that's when everything hit the fan. I was an MDiv, Master of Divinity in counseling. My wife was an MA in counseling. So we met in like counseling classes and the professors, and I'm a big, you know, achiever, and the professors started meeting, and I'll answer your question in a second, but they started meeting saying, we don't think we're going to pass you, Carrie. And I'm like, what do you mean you're not going to pass me? They're like, anytime in your counseling practicum where it was kind of objective program, they would watch you through glass, the professors counseling someone who signed off that they had permission, and you would really counsel them.
Jeez.
And then they would watch you. I don't know if that's awkward. Even legal anymore. But anyway, I don't know. But anyway, these people, the professors were like, anytime someone talks about their pain, like you emotionally run away.
Interesting.
You won't even go there. And it's true. I was like very cerebral, like any feelings, any emotion, anything I couldn't control was like, no. So they start talking this, it gets in my head and I'm like, well, crap, they're going to fail me. And then I'm going to be dropped out of seminary. And then I can't be a pastor. And then, you know, I can't graduate with my wife. So I started to put all this pressure on myself. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go and confess the first time ever to anyone that I was cutting. Okay.
Wow.
And like God had kind of brought me, like my wife, fiance at the time knew because I told her, but like, this was the first time telling anyone other than my fiance at the time. So I go and I go to the professor and I'm like, listen, and I like roll up my sleeves and like, you know, I always cut in places where no one could see. Why? Like it was never attention. It was before the internet, right? Pretty much. So I basically show her and I'm like, I struggle with self-injury and I have, and she's like, well, thank you for sharing. And then 2 days later, I go to my student mailbox and it's an F in my, this is a Christian seminary. And it said, You are not fit to be a counselor. We're failing you from this class. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
So right there, I could have been like, you know, I was very angry. But I had a gentleman exhibit grace to me. He was the vice president of the whole college. I went to him. He was mentoring me. And I said, look, here's the truth. Here's what happened. And get this. The professor who failed me was actually a gentleman sleeping with one of the married students.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And I say that not because like he was the enemy.
Yep.
He was being used by the enemy. But I say that to say like the enemy will use anyone and anything when you're getting close to transformation to like totally silence you. So when people tell me, man, I feel like I'm being really attacked, I'm like, heck yeah, it's because you're a threat now. So anybody who's watching this, if they're feeling like attacked and overwhelmed, I would be like, yeah, you're getting really close to transformation, breakthrough, right? So anyway, long story short, the vice president stepped in. He said, we're going to get you therapy. He can't fail you without my permission. He basically intervened. I started going to counseling, got help. Anyway, made it through. Okay, so now I get brought to the big suburban church in Columbus, Ohio. Now I'm the youth pastor. Now nobody knows about the past. I'm not going to share that.
Yeah, right.
And then around 2-3 years into that, at a church retreat with the leadership, God just starts kind of working in my heart. And I feel like I'm supposed to share it to the group of leadership. And I didn't know if I'd get fired or what, like, but
were you still cutting at the time?
No. Pretty much when I moved, when I started to get counseling and then really started to like put that anger at God, you know, mm-hmm. about 23, 24. So 24 is like when I came to Ohio for whatever reason, like clean slate, boom. So mm-hmm. like 24 last time, but I wasn't about to talk about it. You know, and then I first mentioned it, and it's like a wound has to be, you need time, you know? And so what really was the breakthrough though, was when I released this book, the first edition is, my sister-in-law's on the cover there, but your secret name. And this was 2009, 10. And that was like many years later. So I've only been public like for 14 years about this, you know?
And what's that like? Because here's the dealio. I grew up in evangelical Christian church too, yeah. And I was taught that you are supposed to confess your sins, etc. So it was kind of more of an obligation sense for me. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. There's some stuff that I've confessed to people, and now looking back on it, I actually regret it because the way that it was received, like, yeah, it really, really hurt me. Like something very, very personal that happened to me, I shared with someone, and it wasn't like a healing experience for me. It was something I still need to be healed from.
Gosh.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. And so I've always kind of had this resistance around confession. And it's interesting, as my daughter the other day, you know, she confesses everything. If she does one little thing, she thinks something, she'll come up to me and she says, Mom, it feels so relieving when I tell you things. I feel pressure off of me. Mm. And so I know there's an element of like science, and there is an element of spirituality of like releasing things.
Yeah.
But it's also, in my experience, being so mindful of how you share your story and when you share. And so looking back and reflecting on you sharing your story, do you have any kind of perimeters or takeaways for the process of doing that in a healthy way?
Yeah. So I could have easily made my whole brand and business, Carrie's Helping Recovering Cutters.
Yeah,
like there was a whole blue ocean business model there if I wanted to do it. Like, I'm going to speak to young people and I'm going to help. And, you know, this is the one book I write about it, and that's it. Like, you can tell I'm writing books about blockchain and like, you know, leadership and entrepreneurship. So to me, I never wanted to be that guy.
Yeah.
Like if somebody actually comes up to me and starts talking about self-injury, I'm not like, oh my gosh, but I'm probably like, thanks for sharing that. And here's a copy of my book I'll give you. And if I created a free course and here's a paid course, here's, I'll give it to you for free. Like, I literally want to help people, but I don't want to spend any time with cutters.
Right.
Like, I really don't, because I learned that it's the same reason why I left the pastorate. I am way too future oriented. to be compassionate. Like you might be like, wow, he's got a lot of empathy and compassion, and maybe I do, but I don't, I would never tell somebody like this, but it's like, dude, get fixed, get healed, let's go. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have time or patience for people that, and I know that sounds really rude, and that's why I'm a
No, it
really
doesn't.
bad counselor.
I
Like,
left
my
counseling
wife's a
too, same
counselor.
reason.
Really?
Yes. I couldn't do with it because I'm future oriented too, and it was very hard for me to sit in that spot. And thank God for those people because I'm in therapy. Like I need that, right? But it wasn't my personality. I get that.
Now I'm like, man, let's go change the world. Let's go create something. Let's go dream it up, you know? So to answer your point about like confession, no, I didn't go to everybody and be like, I'm gonna share this. And I'll tell you what though, my parents had a tough time in the beginning. When I first wrote that book, I went to them, and this is encouraging for anybody who's watching this. If you need to tell your story and there's other people that are affected by it, what I did, Heather, because I'm a big people pleaser, and
Oh, totally.
I've worked through a lot of that. But at first, I probably felt like, oh, I can't publish this because what would my parents say? So I went to them before it was released, and I said, okay, mom and dad. And by the way, the whole way I got the book out, and this is a little trick for people who have to write tough stuff, you write it all as if no one will ever read it. If you try to write and you judge people's response of how they're going to feel, like with the last sentence you wrote, you'll never get your book out. So I basically told myself, and Zondervan actually signed me. So, you know, I've been traditionally published a bunch. Look at that. I used to have hair. Look at that. But the point is, like, you got to write as if no one's ever going to read it. And then you decide which version you're going to share with the world. You might scale back some. You might clean up some of the language. I don't know. I'm not saying that's not authentic, but like not everyone needs to know everything, maybe. So I got all the story outside of me. Then I went to my parents and said, okay, mom, dad, love you both. You're gonna read this book if you want. It's gonna probably shock you because you don't even know that I used to cut. Like they didn't even know. Like I kept this
That's
thing
huge.
so quiet. Like you might say, why they send you to a counselor at the age of 10? Because they knew I didn't feel good.
Got it.
You know? And it turned out actually that it was because my mom was going through a terminal illness that we thought, and she thought she was going to die. So I was like processing all that. That's why I was all coming. But we never talked about these things as a family. We're never like, how do you feel, kids, about your mom being sick? So like a lot of it was just, you know, personal stuff. But just to wrap this fully up, then my parents, I said, look, you know, I'd like you to read this. I'm going to share it with the world because I feel like I'm supposed to, but let's talk about it and let's have any dialogue before it goes to the world. And like my dad totally blamed himself, you know? And so it was like intense. But here's the coolest thing. Years later, at a speaking engagement in their hometown, Milwaukee, here I am speaking freely on stage how God wants to heal everybody and my struggle with self-injury. And my parents see me after a semi-long line meeting me saying, thank you for sharing. I struggled with this. Oh my gosh, thank you. Your words, you know, so my parents saw the other side and that it wasn't like our stories aren't about us unless we make them about us. So even in my bio today, Heather, it says like, Carrie O'Brien used to struggle with self-injury, depression, and stuttering. Like, I still put that line in there. Not that I even ever talk about it unless someone asks. Normally, I'm talking about business entrepreneurship, but I still put it in there because I want people to realize, like, it's not all perfect.
It's a point of connection. I mean, I love hearing your story up to that point, but when you turn and you share like some of your darkest stuff, that's when, for me, you start trusting people, right? So you didn't leave the church because of church hurt, church anger. You just wanted to be an entrepreneur.
100%. Like, I get the whole popular thing these days, maybe
Ooh,
deconstruction.
let's talk about it. Let's
Listen,
go.
and maybe that's why I was drawn to you. You know, it's a strong word, but maybe I felt this. I honestly, I don't know. Like, God didn't tell me anything, but I felt like you gotta be there for Heather and give her a Christ authentic view that not everybody, because I think I was telling you the other day, maybe on my podcast when we were when I was interviewing you, but like we all have a God box. And for
Yeah.
some people, the God box is like atheism. And I know that's going to fire some people up because, like, what the heck?
Yeah.
No, I don't agree in God. No, you have a God box. Okay. So if you didn't just pop on the scene. So, like, everybody has a God box. And in that God box are crazy stuff for some people, like being abused by religious people, sexually or emotionally or physically. Like, there's some crazy stuff in that God box. But here's what most people do. Most people take that God box and they're like, screw it. And they chuck it. They chuck the whole thing. Well, that doesn't solve anything, you know, because we've been told that we all have a God-shaped hole, you know, and like C.S. Lewis and Augustine and all these people, like, you know, Tim Keller, like, you were built for a purpose, a much bigger reason than cells, you know, in your body. Like, you have a dream, you have a destiny, you have an eternity. And so, like, just chucking it isn't gonna like solve anything. Like, you gotta still be stuck with yourself with these unanswered questions. So what I encourage people to do, what I've always encouraged people to do, I was the youth pastor that was a little bit edgy, but I was like, write a psalm to God and tell him everything that you're mad about. And then stand up if you want, you don't have to, and read in front of the whole youth group. Like, there's some crazy stuff, you know. But I just saw a lot of kids having breakthroughs because of that. Because I feel like Jesus, we don't have a problem with Jesus, you know, we have a problem with the church, you know, and the church, until you name the church, you can't heal from the church.
What do you mean?
Until you name the person in the church who hurt you, who offended you, you cannot heal. Like, the church can't come to you and be like, hey, Heather, we're sorry. You're actually angry at somebody who represented church or who, in your mind, fit the God box. So what I encourage people to do, no, the whole reason I left the church is it was way too slow. I mean, oh my gosh,
I'm laughing because it's true.
I was like, I was sitting in these meetings every Tuesday and I'm like, oh my gosh, let's make a decision, you know? And again, like, I realize that I don't have the fruit of the spirit of patience. Like, but I feel that it was too slow. Now looking back, I am such an entrepreneur. I feel more freedom, you know, but I don't go back and be like, well, the church sucks. No, like, I go to the church. I'm security at the church, you know, like, I preach at the church. My pastor says, well, you want to preach once in a while. So to me, you can't, quote, give up on the church, because Jesus says in the scriptures that the church is his bride and he gave up his life for the bride, and you're part of the bride. And you might be like, I hate my arm. Man, I hate my arm. Well, in the Bible, it's the body of Christ is, you know, the arm and the like. You can't hate yourself. I mean, that's self-injury. That's pretty deep thought there. But if you say you hate the church and you say you follow Jesus, like, you're self-injuring. I mean, that's interesting.
So I can be super honest with you. I know you won't, you can handle it and tell me what you really think.
You
And
might hate the church, Heather.
no, I
That's okay.
don't think, I don't hate the church. This is what I've been wrestling with. So I went through just leaving and being angry and mad. And now I'm in this spot where I'm just kind of neutral and very curious. And I just looking for real honest truth at this point, because what you said earlier is spot on. I have a deep core wound of belonging. I want to belong. I want to be accepted. I want family. I want your approval. That is a core wound of mine that I'm very, very open about and very aware. So when you put that in the context of religion, it's very easy to fall into a system that makes you feel all of those things if you behave a certain way, and you lose a little bit of, you lose a lot of that core truth that is very intimate between you and God. And I think I'm back in that place where I've removed church. I don't have a lot of Christian friends, to be honest with you.
I
You're
guess
probably the most Christian friend I have.
that's okay.
And it's been cool. I'm really love it, because right now there's no narrative around me and God, and I'm just trying to figure out what this is, just me and him. All that to say, I'm curious your perception on you're a words guy, you're a book guy, you're a story guy, the language we have around the American church. And I think that's where I get caught up on, because we've branded Jesus, we've branded Christianity as an American thing. And we use these words, like you said earlier, like the enemy and Satan. And, you know, sometimes people don't know what that means. And instead what they'll say is, you know, evil or fear or, you know, low energy. They'll use these other terminology.
Or Republicans. No, I'm kidding.
But you know what's crazy is I can say this stuff to you and you're not going to like flip out.
No.
My mama, bless her heart, I love you. But, you know, you go home back to Arkansas and tell my mama, you know, bad energy, low vibes, all that. She's like, don't get into that new age stuff, girl. You know it's the devil. It's just been interesting to me to have people, I feel like, that are saying the same thing. But we have so much division because of language.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, as a former pastor, what do you think about this?
I feel
see how
more
passionate I got? I'm like yelling over here.
I love it. I love it. I, you know, listen, we're having a real chat here today. No editing. So I feel more comfortable in a room full of entrepreneurs who are cussing, you know, and talking about life and business than I do about a group of pastors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that? You know, so take that clip and put that on your sound thing. That, oh my gosh, that would be great. Why do I say that? Now, what's funny is like, okay, I say that because of just, I don't want to go into a small group. I don't want to go into, I don't want to go into a church home group, small group. So I don't. But do I have really deep chats? Like right now, are we having like a transformational chat? Are we doing church right now? Like, I think we are, you know, I think we might be doing it more, you know, than some places. So I'm not against, you know, but here's what I think is cool, Heather, the mature person, and I'm not saying you're immature, but I'm saying
it's fine. That,
the mature person can go back. Like I can go into a Catholic church that's very like high end, like ritualistic, and I can have a personal connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
I can go into the like most backwoods hymn, you know, 20 elderly people with white hair and like have a connection. I can go into the most, you know, drums, guitar, and have a connection. Like, I think you get to the point where you realize like it's not about the thing.
Totally.
And to me, that's where a lot of the younger generation, I would say my generation, but there's a lot of ticked off people in my generation about the church. And they're like, you know, I had to go and my parents drugged me and now I hate it. And you're literally letting something control you. Like I view that as I view any of that as like bondage and slavery and freedom. You know, it's not freedom. So to me, it's fine. Like, why could I not be with a bunch of pastors if they're not willing to have honest chats? And maybe they aren't. It's not the group of pastors. It's probably the group of pastors that I've been with before. Like my pastor and I, Dean Folks, LifePoint Church, we have a great time. I work at a Christian university, you know, and I'm like, I thought honestly, like when I started to work there, I thought, can I roll? Can I roll here? Do they want to roll with me? Like, is this going to work? And it works. And like, I sign a statement of faith saying that I agree to certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to have real life. Like your theology can't be this little thing on a wall. You know, I agree to this thing on the wall and now I'm just going to not do life. Like Jesus was theology in the flesh. So to me, that's where people probably have gotten hurt by the church. It's like, well, it says here. And like, yeah, but you need to express that in life too.
To wrap this into what you're doing now with Igniting Souls and helping unleash ideas into the world.
Yeah.
What is your kind of spiritual take on that? So sometimes, let me give you context. I think, you know what, Heather Parody, you have an awesome idea to start a candle company. And the proceeds are going to go here and here and here. And sometimes I'm like, nah, nah. And you don't do anything with it and you move on. But people like you get fired up thinking, no, 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 girl, you had that candle idea for a freaking reason.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to do something with it. And so that's a lot of conviction. I'm going to put my candle down. But what is, I guess, the deeper why behind why ideas being unleashed are so important to you?
I was just reading today in my Bible. I don't read every day, by the way. Confession. But I was reading today and I rode to town. I was so excited. It says in Lamentations, it said something like God spoke it and then it happened. Okay. Now just to go a little woo-woo on you.
Let's go.
Abracadabra. I create as I speak. It came to pass as it was spoken. I love that word. And I love that word. And if you take a deeper dive into that word, do you know what the word Abba means? Like, have you ever heard of Abba?
Father?
Yes. So abracadabra, right? Abracadabra. It's made up of Father, Son, Spirit. Yeah. You got to Google this. So my point is this, like, I believe it says the very first thing, God said, let there be light. And there was light. So I believe that we are created in God's image and we were literally created to create. And so I believe that when we have an idea and we speak it, I believe that if the world was perfect, it would happen. But I believe we live in a fallen world, which means Stephen Pressfield calls it the resistance.
Yeah.
You know, other people call it other things, tension, frustration. So I believe that when you create something the first time, you've already done what's called first creation. And this gets into my book, Unhackable, which you should read. So Unhackable literally says that when you create something in your mind, it's already existing. Like, you've already created the candle company. You just haven't fully expressed it yet, but you've gone through the process of first creation. And so this gets into a little bit of quantum stuff. And this kind of gets into like the spirituality stuff. But I believe that when you study quantum, you know that things exist in two places and they're connected.
Yeah.
You know? And so like when you pray and then God does something, maybe God's just using a law called quantum physics that he created.
Amen, you know what I'm saying? That. I 100% believe that.
And so
people get freaked out when you say that, Carrie.
What?
People get freaked out when you say stuff like that.
But listen, if we're praying in his name and he owns all the cells and all the matter, and we're working within that law, like maybe that's prayer. And people are like, well, wait, hold on. You're defining science to explain prayer. But it's like, we're chatting, you know, people have had this spirit experience before. They're thinking of someone and boom, they call, you know, and we're like, whoa, you know? So I believe you either believe God doesn't exist or he exists and affects everything. And that's where I go.
Preach. I know we're getting close to the end of this. I didn't get to half the deep
stuff. You got to do that line. I feel more comfortable in a room full of entrepreneurs saying the F word than I do pastors. Soundbite.
Okay, you have to understand who follows me, listens to this show, like that. You're good. You're totally good with this. I'm very, very honest and real about all the things. Good. I think the main reason I've wanted to talk to you and I've been challenged knowing you is it's interesting to see someone who has walked through what you've walked with and seems as though you don't have bitterness and anger towards institutionalized religion. I'm still not convinced we need it. I think it's helpful and interesting. And I went to church the other day for the first time in years and it was a cool experience and it was really neat and I enjoyed it. And
but if you don't go, you don't feel like, well, crap, God's going to hit me today.
No, totally not. I felt like what you said, I need to get to a point where I can sit there and be completely neutral or I know I'm not healed. And so it's been a challenge to me to just sit in rooms and be. But anyways, all that to say, I just really respect what you have walked through, the transparency that you have. And I read it in your bio before, but the hundreds of thousands of people you're influencing through your books and your business and your speaking, my goodness, Carrie, it's unbelievable. I know that you're just getting started. Speaking of, for our last question, What are you most excited about? You have a lot of ventures going on, but what do you think would be the best thing to point our folks to?
I think I've been really pumped about this EZIP.today.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've never been an inventor, but in a week I get my first patent, and this whole thing is about, so you don't need patents. Like, it sounds weird. I patented the thing that is a technology, so you don't need patents, but they gave it to me. But the reason why, I'm not against patents, but they cost so much time and money, 20K in 1 to 3 years. And you know that as a creative, like, you don't have 20K around just to be like, oh, here's my next idea. Here's my next idea. Like, so EZIP is this great first layer, fast layer to protect your idea. And then we often publish it, or vice versa. We publish it first, then we protect it. So
EZIP, that's our direct.
EZIP.today is the, that's a real extension. Yep.
And that idea, real quick, came from someone using the story you told today and making it their own, right?
Talk to me.
When you, your story on cutting, there was a part of that that somebody took, right?
Oh, yeah. So you're saying, have I had my IP stolen? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A pastor took this book years ago. When it, you know how you get Google alerts, and I would put in my like latest book, and then Google alert would be like, oh, someone's, you know, mentioned it or something. Yeah. And then I found a guy was doing a sermon series and claimed it as his own. So yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Woo. Side note. Yeah. Listen, all that will be linked up in the show notes. Last question, Carrie, I've been asking everyone this question.
Yes.
What is something in your life right now in this season that you are deeply questioning and you do not have the answer to? And it could be something super chill, like, why is my kid up there trading crypto? It could be contemplating your life and your choices. It could be anything. Yeah. The whole point of it, though, is it's good to ask questions. It's good to be curious.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I really feel like, you know, I am a conspiracy theorist. I'm just going to tell you. I dig that. I'm just telling you. But they often come true. So I think my biggest question right now is that I don't think America is as polarized as media is trying to make us. And I think that's a weapon that whoever you want to say is using. But I think that when I travel and I connect with people, we actually, a lot of us think similar things. And I feel like what I'm questioning right now is like 2024 and just like, can we emerge and still all be friends?
No joke.
Yeah.
End it right there. Hopeful music playing in the background.
That's right.
Carrie, thank you so much. Your time is incredibly valuable. Thanks for spending it with us today.
Thank you.